Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is really, we've accumulated so much knowledge in our heads, right? It's pointless, actually, if it just stays there, right? It's all about applying it. And the best way to really learn something is to teach it, right?
That is Joey Chan, Principal Consultant for Cloud Jedi Solutions. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here on the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we sit down and talk with Joey on a wide range of topics, especially his organization, the Philippines Developer Group and Philippines Dreaming. But we start with how he was learning Salesforce.
A lot of it is really about going through the documentation. And One of the things that I did in order to basically keep up with all the rest of the ecosystem is I try to find all of the possible Salesforce related blogs that I can find. And if you remember Google Reader, I used to subscribe to all of it and basically go through all of the past posts that I can find. And basically my thinking there is, hey, I want to learn as much as I can about Salesforce, and this is my way of making sure that I know as much as I can about it. That way, once we have a potential client, I'd know as much as about it already, right?
Nice. No, I missed the days of Google Reader, and I sometimes joke that a podcast is one of the few bastions of an RSS feed that's still out there.
Right.
In speaking of leveling up and training, you have 15 certifications, is that correct?
So far, I haven't been counting, but around that much, yes. Some of it probably just expired already, but yeah, still
got it.
Right now, I'm not directly collecting certification anymore, but of course, I'm still learning, right? Right now, we're focusing a lot more on the business side of things, so mostly growing marketing, sales, and all that.
Got it. In that loop of getting certifications, do you have any advice for people who are looking to get certified?
My best advice is basically start scheduling it as soon as you can, and then do the work.
I
usually schedule mine, let's say, 1 month ahead. And then basically just block off the time of your calendar. Hey, for example, Saturday or Sunday, I'll make sure that I spend 4 or 5 hours just going through the material, right? And personally, though, I know there are quite a lot of free and paid resources out there. I usually just stick with the official resources, though. Mostly really just Trailhead and documentation. That's actually more than enough.
Got it.
Definitely, there are a lot of study materials that's paid that can help. But for me, I've never had to do that.
So you haven't necessarily had to like rely on example questions like or study tools like that?
Correct, yes. The thing is, I mean, most of the free ones are even probably worse because some of the answers might not be correct, right? So
It give you like a kind of a misleading view of what the exam might look like.
Correct, yes. And most of the time it's really just a study guide and looking at the documentation themselves, right?
Got it. Now I want to just hit back on that really quickly. Do you book the certification exam early so that that gives you like a forcing function that you're like, I have to study for this because it's on my calendar?
Exactly, yes. So basically, it's something to force me that, hey, this is target, and we have to make sure that we at least take that exam on that day.
Got it. And how has things like answering questions online and working with things like Stack Exchange, how has that influenced like how you've been training with Salesforce and also how you've been interacting with the community?
One of the things that I probably lacked back then when I was starting is basically opportunities to learn a lot about Salesforce. The thing is, you only get the projects depending on what it is, right? But you don't necessarily get exposed to all of the different possible use cases that people around the world are experiencing.
Right.
My way to compensate for those is to actually go through the Answers community and try to help as much people as I can.
Got it.
Whenever I encounter a question that I don't know the answer to, I would then search for it and then answer it for them. So in the process, I'm learning the different aspects of Salesforce that you don't normally get to touch.
Got it. So you're using sites like Stack Exchange as a reason to go out and research and learn new code.
Correct, yes. Well, back then, Stack Exchange wasn't really a thing yet. So it's a lot of it's the Answers community.
Got it. Nice. Yeah, no, I love that in part because that mirrors actually, to be honest, it's one of the reasons we have Trailhead, is because I would go to my workshops and I would talk about intermediate to advanced topics like Apex REST. And what I found consistently was it wasn't that the developers didn't necessarily know of the existence of Apex REST or similar things, but their job had never given them an excuse to go out and actually try it. And it's like, that's what we wanted to do in the workshops with like some of the early prototypes of Trailhead, was like, here's a challenge to kind of force you to go and fix like an Apex REST kind of thing. So,
right. That's one of the things that I really like about the Trailhead. Basically, as you're collecting more badges, you actually, are technically learning a lot along the way. A lot of those are things that you don't necessarily get to touch in your day-to-day work, right? And same thing with certification, though. I view it not necessarily as something that proves your expertise, but it basically tells everyone that, hey, you have this baseline knowledge about this part of Salesforce, right?
Right.
Yeah, basically just learning things that you normally wouldn't touch. Like, I mean, things like advanced currency management, things like those. It really depends on the company that you're working with, right? If they need that or not. So,
In our platform, there's a lot of dark corners that people don't necessarily have to go shed a light into.
Right.
When did you start to kind of move from you focusing on, you know, learning and researching and answering questions to getting involved with and even organizing community groups and events?
Well, here in the Philippines, it wasn't around 2018 or 2019 where we actually get more people involved in Salesforce. I tried to start something back in 2015, but then there weren't really that much community yet, at least people involved in Salesforce yet during that time.
Gotcha.
So a lot of my involvement was literally on the online communities. It's only back in 2018 to 2019 that we actually started having in-person meetings, but then, building up the community.
And what was the motivation for that? Why did you want to get a local in-person event running?
A lot of it is really sharing the passion with Salesforce, because throughout my whole career, technically working career, it's all focused on Salesforce, right? I've spent countless hours on Salesforce. And whenever I hear someone talking about Salesforce, it makes me feel excited, though. Because imagine you're giving so much time to something, and whenever it's being talked about, hey, I can share something about it, and you'd learn something about it, right? So it's really about that, and really paying it forward. I mean, Salesforce has given me quite a lot in terms of career opportunities. And the thing is, I'm not sure about other technologies, but Salesforce gave me the opportunity to work with companies all around the world while staying within the Philippines.
Gotcha. Nice. That's interesting in that it sounds like one of the big benefits of doing something like that is you're kind of like, you're creating like a feedback loop. Like, you're sharing information, you're getting information, and you're also getting like, I guess, a community feel good movie, because you're doing it live with other people who are also being passionate about this kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's really sharing what you know, right? I mean, whenever we look at, let's say, for people that we look up to, a lot of times it's actually because they shared something or they're sharing information that you're learning from, right? You then trust this person and then you look up to them, right? So.
Yeah. Nice. And it sounds like we kind of alluded to this in that one of the challenges of getting a local developer group up and running is just that critical mass of getting enough people together in order to you know, really have an in-person events. What are some of the challenges that you've had in forming and keeping a community like that going?
A lot of it is really about engagement. The thing is, especially right now with COVID, I guess part of the challenge is bringing great content and bringing great speakers, right? A lot of what's being discussed is probably already being recorded somewhere. So either it's through the Dreamforce website, or some of them are actually in YouTube, right? And there's quite a lot of videos about different topics. I mean, it's all in YouTube right now, right? I guess before COVID, a lot of the benefit of having the in-person event is actually not just the session itself, but actually the discussions that happen around it.
Oh, and absolutely. That, yeah.
And the friendships that are made and people really out there to help each other. I mean, typically whenever people ask around, usually it's an opportunity for you to actually give them a much more in-depth answer on what they need, right? And it's really just sharing what you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to say, it's one of the things I always loved about doing developer group presentations was not the presentation itself, but the Q&A that would come after, which I think has always been some of the most engaging moments of Q&A that I've had when I've been on stage. But also, more importantly, the little tidbits that I learn from developers, which may have nothing to do, you know, with like the presentation that I just gave. I didn't know continuous integration was a challenge on the platform until, you know, and this was years ago, right? But I, you know, I'm having a conversation with somebody about CI and Jenkins and stuff like that. I'm like, that's interesting. And now I can go back and, you know, and actually research that a little bit.
Right. A lot of it, I guess, is because of the focus of our jobs. You're usually just exposed to what we have to be exposed to, right? We don't normally get to experience how, let's say, a Fortune 500 company does things. And they usually have a lot of things there happening all around, right? So the challenges are different all across the board. But it's all happening within the Salesforce ecosystem, right? And that's also one of the my motivation is really back then is to understand how things work for both the small, medium, and large companies. Because most likely for large companies, unless you're working for them or you're part of a large consultancy, you won't necessarily get a chance to work with them directly, right? So in tidbits like that, I usually get insights in terms whenever I talk to people. And part of what I usually do whenever we have in-person meetings is actually going around and meeting all the different people within the community, just talking to them, just understanding what they do, what they're focused on, and basically building the relationship. And a lot of times they usually have problems, and I mean, we're all excited to help someone with their questions, right? So that's part of it.
Nice. Well, going back to the elephant in the room, how has the pandemic affected this kind of organization and organizing? And, you know, what kind of new content are you seeing? What kind of new interactions are you seeing?
So with regards to the pandemic, actually, we were initially planning on quite a number of events. Here in the Philippines, what we did in terms of the community is we actually organized ourselves into one big group.
Okay.
I know for other countries, different groups have their own setup, right? But what we did for the Philippines is we organized ourselves to make sure that we're not stepping into each other's events, basically. So we have the developer group, the admin group, Marketing Cloud, Pardot, Nonprofit, Women in Tech. So just making sure that we're clear in terms of what we want there. So yeah, make sure that we're all organized.
Nice. Have you changed your strategy on like how to get speakers now that it's not in person and you have sort of access, sort of more access because you can kind of ask anybody to appear remotely?
Right, exactly. So one of the things that we thought about during the pandemic is, hey, now that we are forced to go virtual in terms of the user group meetings, one of the things that we try to take advantage of is, hey, there's nothing stopping us from inviting people from around the world to speak for our within our group, right? So one of the things that we did is we actually started what we call Salesforce MVP series. This is where we would actually invite all of the people the groups want to listen to, like people like Steve Moe, a lot of Salesforce MVPs. I mean, they're doing quite a lot of contribution to the community, right? So they're fairly well known. So they are the type of people that people want to listen to, right? So that helps a lot in terms of attendance. And of course, we're also recording all of those, so it can be found in our YouTube channel.
Gotcha. Nice. And you'll have to remind me to put a link to that YouTube channel in the show notes for this episode. On the flip side, if I'm reading LinkedIn correctly, you spoke at the Cleveland Developer Group. So what's it been like on the other side of it that you can now connect remotely with DGs that you probably never would have visited?
Right, exactly. Well, one of the things that I enjoy really is to be able to connect to all of the different groups around the world. Basically, being able to interact with a lot of different leaders, understanding how their community works, and what we can actually apply on our own communities, right? So with regards to that Cleveland developer group, one of the things that I shared there is the 5 free tools that you can easily install within Salesforce that can help both admins and developers in their daily work. So a lot of it are mostly free Chrome extensions and some are web application. So yeah, it's all recorded to them.
Okay. Can you give me the elevator pitch of those 5 tools? Like a quick description.
So the first one is Salesforce Inspector. Mm-hmm. One of the things that it allows you to do is easily see all of the fields within that specific record. So typical use cases, if somebody needs to look at a field that's not on the page layout, you usually have to either add it on the page layout or go through a report to see it, right? So with that specific tool, you can see all of the fields values. And then part of the feature is being able to, for example, easily log in as a user, just typing things in. Other tools are like Salesforce Organizer, where within Salesforce Classic or Lightning, you could move to different parts of the page or setup just by typing it. If you're familiar with Alfred and basically a quick search, within Salesforce, right? Most of the time, we already know where to go, but it takes time to do the clicks, right? So we can save a few seconds here and there, so it adds up. Another tool is Salesforce DevTools. It allows you to easily generate really nice Excel files that shows you all the metadata information about a specific object. It includes like field name, label. If it's a formula, it even includes a formula itself, pick list values, and things like those. Most admin can easily use, though, for data dictionary.
Nice. On the organizer, I find that funny because in my workshops, I used to joke that if I didn't tell people that the quick filter existed in setup, that I would probably get stoned by the end of the day because that thing just saves so much time.
Yeah, I mean, it's even faster if you were using a Salesforce organizer. Sure. Right?
So. Nice. Very cool. So with all of this kind of changing in trends and how people are interacting and speaking, do you think in like a post-vaccine world where we're not trying to, you know, stay away from this virus, do you think that the community is going to keep kind of a virtual layer of interaction or go back full in with in-person events?
I'm 100% sure that virtual is never going away.
Gotcha.
Because there will always be something, because there are quite a lot of benefits with going virtual. But of course, there's also a lot of cons with it, right? But there's still going to be a place for virtual meetings, especially here in the Philippines. The problem is the traffic. Imagine if you just need to travel around 3 to 5 miles.
Yeah.
It could take you at least an hour.
Gotcha. Interesting. Interesting.
So that's usually a challenge. And people usually can't just leave their work whenever they want to. So usually there's a specific time, so you need to have a specific schedule for that, right? Back then, we usually have it around 7:30 p.m.
So you
usually can't have really that long of a session, right?
And
you only have so much time. So that's part of the challenge.
Interesting. Tell me some of the cons of this virtual interaction layer. Like, what are some of the drawbacks that you're seeing?
Well, one of the things that's missing right now is a lot of the interactions between the participants are either eliminated or minimized a lot, right? One of the things that I've been noticing is people tend to simply just listen and then drop off after it's done, right? So I think one of the most important things that I'd want to build up is how we can help each of the participants know each other, right? So, I mean, they know the organizer, but in between them, I mean, it helps a lot if they can have discussions here and there, right?
Yeah.
So one of the ways that we're actually addressing that is we also have Facebook groups, because here in the Philippines, Facebook is really big.
And gotcha.
That's almost anyone that you know probably have a Facebook account, unless Got they it. Intentionally didn't want to have one.
Got it.
So that helps in terms okay. of quick discussions here and there. But at the same time, it would be nice to have really discussions in between. Mm-hmm. We typically have between 50 to 70 people within our user group meetings. So it will be quite hard to have everyone talking, right? So
right you can't just wander off to a corner and have a one-on-one,
right?
Yeah. Are you seeing anything with like Zoom fatigue
so far? For us, I think depending on the person, that may be a consideration. Yes. Because the problem with the pandemic, I mean, everybody's working from home, right. Part of the challenge there is people tend to have back-to-back meetings now.
Mm-hmm.
Before, you usually have some break in between, but you're basically, hey, whenever somebody sees a blank available time on your calendar, they would book it up and then...
right.
I'm not sure if that happens to everyone, but that's some of the scenarios that I see.
Yeah, totally.
So usually during the evenings... people mm-hmm. just tend to want to rest, right? So.
Right. Right. That makes sense. Okay, let's talk about it in a slightly broader scope. When did you start organizing Philippine Dreaming, and what was the motivation behind that?
We did Philippine Dreaming on October. In terms of mm-hmm. organizing it, we didn't actually have that much time. I believe we started immediately after, I believe... if I remember correctly, it's Failhead X Global Gathering. Okay. So that's probably just around 3 to 4 months lead mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we did there is, I know we can actually make it bigger. We had around 240 participants back then.
Nice.
We know that we could actually make it bigger, but none of us actually had professional experience in terms of organizing such an event. So we'd Got rather it. Just set our expectation and make a great event rather than trying to go too big, right? Actually initially planning on having at least 500 participants this year, okay. but the pandemic happened. So
right.
And technically, we're still not allowed to gather here in the Philippines. So and
gotcha.
Most companies are basically on a work from home arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we wanted to, we aren't allowed to.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you have any advice for somebody who's thinking about doing something like this, but like yourself has no experience in it?
With regards to the Philippine Dreaming?
I should say had no experience in it, because obviously you've been in the waters now.
I guess it helps a lot to have the set of people. I mean, you can't really do it alone. You
gotcha.
Need a team to do things, right? I mean, much like any event, like, for example, a wedding, there's mm-hmm. usually a team of people that's helping each other out, right? It's really finding that core team that you can work together on and really go through the up and down, right? I mean,
nice.
It's definitely not something smooth sailing, but it's definitely a great experience, and it definitely helps a lot in terms of building a relationship with each other.
Got it. So moving more into your business side of things, you have the distinction of being number one on the AppExchange developer listing, and you're not just highly rated, you actually have been rated a lot as well. Was this like a professional goal, or did it just sort of happen?
Well, it's not really a goal in itself to me, mm-hmm. but of course... part of it is, of course, the rating system of Salesforce, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever we work on a project, I usually request for some review there, right? So that way, it's not just lost in the void. I usually have it either in LinkedIn or there in the AppExchange. So I guess part of it's really being there since early on, back in, 2010. So a lot of really accumulated number of reviews of the different companies that we've worked with. And at least for our setup, we usually work with a lot of SMEs. So the typical project could last between weeks to 1 or 2 months. So the cycles are actually fairly quick.
Yeah.
So we tend to get a chance to work with a lot of different companies. I know for larger companies, you tend to be stuck in, let's say, one project for like a year or two, right? So I guess that's part of the difference there.
When did you, have you always worked as a team, or did you kind of come to a conclusion that you can get work done either more efficiently or go after bigger projects if you formed Cloud Jedi, you formed a company?
Well, AF technically started Cloud Jedi in 2010. Okay. So most of the years, actually, for the past, 7, 8 years, I've mostly been doing things on my own. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, I'm mostly building a team, mainly because of capacity building. I mean, we've grown our client base to the point that, hey, I can't do this alone, though. So, right. I mean, as much as I'd like to, I mean, I'd have to sacrifice quite a lot of things, especially now that we have two kids. Uh-huh. So we have a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old. So
got it. Yes, I've heard that they can be at least a little bit time consuming. True,
right? Just a little bit. Yeah, it's just one of those things that I try not to. Try to make sure that I don't ignore them.
A good goal to have indeed. Now that's our show, but before we go, I did ask after Joey's favorite non-technical hobby, and it turns out he gets a lot more exercise than I do.
For me, it's actually CrossFit. So it also helps me in terms of making sure nice. That I'm not working too much. Although it's still a workout, so at least gives me a lot of sanity in terms of not facing the computer too much.
I want to thank Joey for the great information and great conversation. Of course, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this podcast, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. I'll talk to you next week.